The Big 12 regular season race is heading down to the wire. I'm Pete Mundo on Heartland College Sports. He is Matthew Postens, our lead Big 12 basketball writer. There is one Saturday left in the regular season, and it will come down to either Houston or Iowa State. It has been a busy week of basketball. Right now, when you look at the standings, Houston is one game ahead of Iowa State, but we'll see what happens on Saturday. Iowa State goes on the road to play Kansas State, and then Houston hosts Kansas. So, Matthew, my first thought here is, one, how much do you think the regular season title really matters? Like, Houston's, I think, got a one seed locked up, even if they lose on Saturday to Kansas. So does it really matter? Do you think they really want it? Does Kelvin Sampson really want that regular season title?
Yeah, I think they really do. I mean, when you think about them moving into a new conference and in essence moving up from a mid-major to a high major, I think it is a big deal to them, honestly. You know, you see them celebrate when they got a share of the championship, when they beat UCF on Wednesday night. I think they want more. I think for them, it's also an opportunity. You know, right now they're a projected to be a one seed, but there's also the opportunity, depending upon what happens around the country the next week and a half, to be the number one overall seed. And that could make your path a little bit easier for them. You know, if they're a one seed, they're going to be in the South region, which means they'll go through Dallas. And that's an important piece of the puzzle, too. It allows more of their fans to come to Dallas to support them and gives them a bit of more of a home court advantage than going through any one of the other three regions. So I think it remains of vital importance to Houston, not just to solidify themselves as a number one seed, but also I think bragging rights to them. I think if you're a first year team in this conference and you can win it outright, I think that matters a big deal to them.
You know, I hadn't thought about what you just laid out there, and it makes a lot of sense from the standpoint of just first year, new league, coming up from an AAC conference, moving up to the Big 12, the best basketball conference in the country, and then being able to win it in year one. I do think there's something to be said for that. So now we go into this weekend, and we look at this Iowa State team that had to come back against BYU to remain undefeated at Hilton Coliseum. Honestly, Matthew, I'm watching the game and I'm thinking to myself, okay, we're going to be talking about Houston. They're going to be the Big 12 regular season champs, but there is something magical about that Coliseum. What did you see from the Cyclones on Wednesday night?
You know, I saw a team that, you know, didn't really have it offensively for the first 25, 30 minutes of that game. And this is why their ability to defend is so important. They didn't let BYU just truly run away from them. I know BYU was up 14 points at one point in the second half, but they never let BYU truly run away and hide. And, you know, once they finally got their offense back on track, Taman Lipsey finally got to where he was shooting the ball well. I think that kind of ignited the whole team from an offensive standpoint. And then late in the game, you know, once it became a close game, BYU just made three critical mistakes on three straight possessions, turning the basketball over. And for the most part in that game, they had done a really good job of moving the ball around, which you have to do against Iowa State's defense. Ball movement and the ability to get second chances and get good shots is key. And BYU did that for about 35 minutes. And then it just kind of fell apart for them the last few minutes. And part of that was them. Some of the mistakes they made, I thought, were really just, you know, really forced errors on their part. But some of that was Iowa State's defense too, and their ability to just make you feel uncomfortable for an entire 30-second shot clock. It really came in handy down the stretch, especially once they were able to get their offense moving in the right direction.
You know, I'm looking at, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I was thinking about it with Iowa State. I don't know. Let me see where Lenardi's got him. He's got him as a two seed right now. Yeah, I'd be surprised if they were to fall to a three, no matter what happens, because they're the number two seed, if you really want to get in the weeds. This is a program that, for all of its success in basketball, has disappointed in March. They've done great in the Big 12 tournament, but yeah. Hoiberg, Prohm, and Otts have all been to Sweet 16s, but they haven't been to an Elite Eight in 24 years. And something tells me, Matthew, that Iowa State fans, understandably, are looking at this team, and I don't think you can guarantee or say Final Four or bust unless you're a Kansas or a Duke or something, but I think this fan base can reasonably expect, depending on the draw, they should be able to get and they should expect to be able to get to an Elite Eight. Is that unreasonable?
I don't think it's unreasonable. I also think there's a, I'm sure Iowa State fans remember the last time they went undefeated at Hilton. They were a two seed and they lost in the first round in the NCAA tournament. So that's not something I think they really even want to think about. But when I compare this team to the one that went to the Sweet 16 2 years ago, the two things that really stick out are, one, I think they're a better defensive team than they were 2 years ago. And two, I think they're a better three-point shooting team, or at least they have guys on their team that are better three-point shooters. It's not just Isaiah Brockington and a couple of guys that could hit a couple of threes, or last year with Gabe Kalscher and a couple of guys that can hit some threes. They've got four guys in this team that can hit the three pretty consistently and do it at a fairly high percentage. And I think that's going to make a difference for them when they get into the NCAA tournament. That defense combined with their ability to shoot from three and do it consistently and do it well, that gives them a good pathway to a potential second weekend of the tournament that might allow them to get to the Elite Eight. There aren't many teams to me in the country that can defend like they can. And one of them is Houston, and they won't be in their region.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Now, when you look at this weekend, they're playing, Iowa State's playing Kansas State. Normally I'd say Kansas State has nothing left to play for. I mean, they're not making the NCAA tournament, at least, unless they make some massive run next week in Kansas City after a win on Saturday, which just feels like a long shot at this point. So is Kansas State at all juiced up for this? Does this tie back to the Jerome Tang, Otzelberger tiff from earlier this season where they're going to be fired up for that? This rivalry, Farmageddon, is a good one.
Yeah.
Or do you see K-State just kind of, I don't know, laying over for the Cyclones and they cruise to a victory?
I don't know. It's a good question because they went into Allen the other night and they just got drilled. I mean, that's all there is to it. And that was more about Kansas than it was about Kansas State. Kansas played an incredibly good game Tuesday night. It's interesting because you got to remember the top two teams that don't make the NCAA tournament in this conference in NCAA net go to the NIT. And right now, Kansas State would be on the outside looking in. If I looked at the net properly last night, say Cincinnati doesn't make it, they would get in. The next team is actually UCF.
Yeah.
So right now, Kansas State is, unless they get picked as an at-large for the NIT, they really are on the outside looking in. They're not among the top 12 teams that are on the first four out, second four out on Lenardi's. They've fallen completely out of there. So, you know, I'm going to be interested to see how motivated they're going to be on Saturday. I think playing Iowa State will motivate them, but if they come out like they came out against Kansas, I could see that being a blowout, and you know, I could see them having a short stay in Kansas City. If we're being honest, I'm having a hard time figuring out, you know, how motivated this group is right now. Tang is motivated, clearly. I mean, he talks about it all the time, but you know, how motivated is this group at this point, you know, given the fact that they're probably on the outside looking in, barring something, like you said, like winning the Big 12 tournament is probably their only avenue to get into the NCAA tournament at this point. I'm trying to figure out where the motivation is for them right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you look at the top of the standings, obviously Houston has that one game lead over Iowa State. Without getting too far in the weeds here, Randy Peterson from the Des Moines Register, and Randy's retiring this season. So God bless Randy. He's done this for, I think, 52 years, if I saw that right. Just amazing the career he's had up there for the Des Moines Register and covering that market. He wrote on Wednesday night that if Iowa State beats Kansas State and then Houston loses to Kansas, they're tied. However, the Cyclones have the tiebreaker based on winning percentages against third place teams. It's not clear to me who the third place team is going to be just yet, because like you've got Texas Tech playing Baylor this weekend, and that could shake up who ends up being in third place in the Big 12. So I'm not doubting him. It's just very complex.
Yeah, he's applying the tiebreaker properly, because I had to do this for the women too in a couple of places. So if you have two teams that are tied head to head and they split, which Houston and Iowa State did, the next tiebreaker for the conference is your winning percentage against the team that occupies the top spot. So in this case, Iowa State and Houston are going to be the top two teams in this scenario. So then you go to the third place team, like Randy said. But like, to your point, right now, Baylor's the third place team. They could lose. They could end up in a tie for third place. Then you've got to break that tie to figure out who gets the tiebreaker. So there's a lot. He's applying the tiebreaker properly, but there's still a lot to be decided in terms of who will be one and who will be two. And if you end up with, I'm not sure if you could end up with a three-team logjam for third place. I think that's possible. Then you've got to break that tie before you can figure out who the ones and the twos are. You know who the one and the two is, but you're going to have to break that tie between those teams below them so you can break that tie to figure out who the number one seed will be.
Well, luckily, basketball is much easier to figure out, or at least it has less meaning than picking who's going to be in the Big 12 championship in football, which is all the drama we dealt with back in November. Luckily, we're potentially just talking about seeding, but still, even the seeding, we're talking about double buys versus single buys versus maybe not having a buy. So the seedings do matter going into Kansas City next week. I mean, we're talking about, can Texas Tech potentially get a double buy if they beat Baylor this weekend? Suddenly, that's a big deal for the Red Raiders. So this stuff does matter as you look at the grand and the bigger picture here.
Yeah, and if you think about the bracket, I don't have it in front of me, but let's just say Kansas ends up as the 7th seed. So they would play Wednesday. And I think that pathway would take them to the 3 seed, you know, if they win that game. So let's just say the 3 seed is Baylor. Well, then, yeah, you get the double bye if you're Baylor, but there's a distinct possibility you're going to play Kansas in the quarterfinals, which, do you really want to play Kansas in the quarterfinals? Yeah. If they played like they played Tuesday night, I really don't want to.
that's a very good point. He's Matthew Postens. I'm Pete Mundo on HeartlandCollegeSports.com covering the Big 12. It's always great to be here with you and have him joining us talking Big 12 hoops with just one Saturday left in the regular season. So as you look at this weekend slate of games, the Big 12 looks like it's set with 9 teams in the tournament, Matthew. There's not a lot of drama on the bubble. As you noted, there's no Big 12 team in Joe Lenardi's. He's only got TCU in one of the last 4 buys, but they're not in the last 4 in. There's no one in the first 4 out. There's no one in the next 4 out. TCU, they're taking on UCF. I mean, do they have to win that game just for Jamie Dixon to feel good going into Kansas City next week?
I don't think they have to win that game, but again, I think that would be a good game for them to win just from the standpoint of they've already won 20 games in the regular season. That's a pretty good precursor to getting selected to the NCAA tournament. And to your point about them being like the last 4 buys, that's like the place you go to before you end up on the bubble. So that would be a good solidifying win for them if they can beat UCF. UCF's got a solid net rating. It's in the 60s, 70s. It would make them feel good going into the tournament, but I think it might even get them out of that last 4 buys so they don't have to worry too much if they don't win their first game in Kansas City. If I'm Jamie Dixon, I want to win that game just to continue to solidify my resume for March.
What about Baylor, Texas Tech? Let's touch on that. It's a game that's about seeding, really, more than anything else in terms of the Big 12 tournament, getting that double bye, and then come Selection Sunday. Do one of these two teams need this win more than the other? It feels more important to me to Texas Tech because at times, when you look at the last couple of weeks, I don't want to say they limped down the home stretch. They have won their last 2 games. But there was a tough stretch there with Iowa State and UCF and Texas where they didn't look very good. They've gotten back on track, but it was against bad competition in West Virginia and Oklahoma State. So I think for Tech, this game means a bit more because they want to win they can feel good about going into postseason play.
Yeah, and plus they struggled against Baylor the first time they played up in Waco. There was a point in that game where I think they had the lead in the second half, and it kind of got away from them, if I remember correctly. So, you know, when you get a team like that at home and you get a team who's playing well right now, like Baylor is, you want to play well, even if you lose that game. I think the worst possible scenario for Texas Tech would be for them to lay an egg like they did against Texas a couple of weeks ago at home. They don't need another loss like that. Even if they lose to Baylor on Saturday, it needs to be a game where they play well, where they can carry that momentum into Kansas City. But, you know, to your point about the double bye, if they win and a couple of things break the right way, they could end up with a double bye going into that tournament. And, you know, that's more than motivation enough, I think, for Texas Tech to go out, play well, and beat Baylor, who has been good on the road in conference, but not great. Nobody's been great on the road, but they've had some wishy-washy moments on the road here in the past couple of months in conference play. So it should be a really interesting game. Both teams are about as healthy as they can be. Both teams have quite a bit to play for. I think I like Texas Tech winning that game at home, honestly.
Mm. Yeah, I do too. I really do. At the bottom of this league, you know, we've talked about this on and off throughout the season. Just how bad does it get for West Virginia? How bad does it get for Oklahoma State? I look at UCF and Cincinnati. They're both 6-11. Wes Miller and Johnny Dawkins aren't going anywhere. You can make an argument they've overachieved. They've had a lot of very close losses as well.
Yeah.
They've competed near the top of the Big 12 with some of the best teams in the league. So they're fine. It's really just Mike Boynton. And then, of course, Josh Eiler, who's in this job on an interim basis.
Yeah.
If you're a betting man right now, are either or both or neither of these guys back in their respective positions next season?
I think Boynton's back next year.
You still feel, because we've talked about that. It's been a couple of weeks.
We've talked about it. And Matt Lernlander wrote a piece about coaching hot seats. And he kind of feels the same way, you know, between the buyout and, you know, Boynton's time there. It's a significant buyout if they fire him. I think it's like $7 or $8 million. So I feel like based on that, if he can keep that recruiting class together that he brought in this year, I think he gets one more year. Eiler, he's not, I don't think he'll be at West Virginia at all in any capacity next year. I think it'll be they'll bring in a new head coach. He'll bring in a new staff. Eiler will have to go out and find, you know, someplace to land. He's been at West Virginia a long time. It's not like he's only been an assistant coach there for a year or two. Before he was the assistant coach, he was their full-time director of basketball operations for like a decade and a video coordinator before that. So he's been there a long time, but I don't see him having a place on whoever the new coach is in terms of his staff.
Yeah.
But no, if I'm betting, Boynton's back. Eiler is, you know, already, I wouldn't say he's already out the door, but he's not going to get that job next year.
Yeah, I agree. I'm looking around this conference and I'm saying to myself, okay, I've got Houston, I've got Iowa State at the top. But of the next six or seven teams that are going to be in the tournament in the Big 12, Baylor, yeah, Tech, Kansas, BYU, TCU, Texas, Oklahoma, who do you feel like is the most dangerous, or maybe the sneakiest is the best way to put it, team in this league? I think people are going to overlook BYU.
I do too.
That's the team where if they're hot from deep and they're working it inside as well, I want no part of BYU in the tournament. But you know as well as I do, you get into the tournament and sometimes these teams that are good from deep, they just get ice cold. They're not used to the floor, the feel. It's a new environment and it's not the same. But I would be very nervous, and I think a lot of people are going to overlook this BYU team.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, part of the reason they lost to Iowa State was because they got cold from three. Yeah. They got cold from everywhere in that game in the second half. I think they shot 24%. But if you watched that game, you see what happens when everything's working. When they're shooting the three well, when their big guys are running high screens, they're distributing the ball from the high post on back screens, they're really difficult to deal with. They've got like a combination of, you know, old school Kentucky's three-point shooting, which Mark Pope played for Kentucky back in the day, and what Princeton likes to do with backdoor screens back in the Pete Carroll days. I mean, it's a really interesting mix of things that they do offensively. They've got two really good passing big men, and they've got a collection of guards that can shoot well, and they're not afraid to drive to the basket either. I think there's this perception that they're just a three-point shooting team. They're not. They've got some really tough guards that can drive to the basket, draw fouls, and get to the free throw line. You know, if they shoot well from three and their big guys are clicking, they could be a really hard team to deal with in the tournament, no question.
That's how I feel. As we look at the next minute here, Matthew, before we got to wrap it up, how delusional are Louisville fans thinking they're going to land Scott Drew from Baylor? I mean, I don't know much about Louisville or its fan base, but they are completely delusional thinking Scott Drew is leaving his situation in Waco for them.
Yeah, so that's based off a report from ESPN Louisville, credible report. And yes, absolutely. If I'm a Louisville athletic director, Scott Drew is at the top of my list. His resume is perfect. His ability to rebuild a program cannot be questioned. Yeah, absolutely. He'd be one of my first phone calls. But the thing is, they built that brand new building on the back of his success, on the back of that national championship. He has everything he needs. He has his program at a point where he can recruit five-star guys and he can recruit one-and-done guys. And they fit perfectly into what he wants to do from a culture standpoint and from a basketball standpoint. Yep. Louisville's a great program. It's a historic program. Denny Crum did amazing things with it. It's one of those real linchpin programs in that part of the country. But they're in a bad place right now, and they're trying to rebuild it. Scott Drew would be a great choice, but Scott Drew is not leaving Baylor. He's not. And that report said they've got a good second choice. I'm glad they have a good second choice because they're going to need it.
They are. He's Matthew Postens, our lead Big 12 basketball writer. Follow him on Twitter at Postens Postcard. That way you can follow all his coverage. He'll be in Kansas City for the Big 12 tournament this week, as will I. You're the man, Matthew. We'll see you soon. Thanks so much.
You bet, Pete. Appreciate it.
All right. Make sure you are subscribed to the channel. Hit that 5-star on the podcast. And we'll be doing this a lot next week with the Big 12 tournament here. Have a great day. I'm Pete Mundo. He's Matthew Postens. Check us out at heartlandcollegesports.com. And we'll talk to you soon. Go Big 12.